Hello and welcome to the Yanks Are Coming podcast. My name is Carter Krishnayer. Today we have a special interview with Peter Wilt, who is founding the new third division in the United States, the National Independent Soccer Association, which plans to launch in 2018. Most of our listeners, I'm sure, are very familiar with Peter Wilt. He was the president of the Chicago Fire for the first 8 years of their existence, won an MLS Cup and 4 U.S. Open Cups, I believe, in that time period. Also is well-traveled as far as an executive in the soccer world, Minnesota Thunder, Indy 11, his most recent project, launching that team, which has led the second division NASL in attendance each of the previous 3 seasons, or has been in the top 2 attendance each of the previous 3 seasons. Also, the Chicago Red Stars, NWSL side, now WPS side when Peter helped found the team in 2009, as well as the Milwaukee Wave, indoor soccer, and countless other things. I know I'm leaving some things out here. So anyway, I had the opportunity to talk to Peter Wilt about his new venture, the NISA, as he calls it, the National Independent Soccer Association, really exciting plans he's got, and here's the interview. So, Peter, talk to us a little bit about this new league, NISA. There's a lot of excitement about it, I think, among core soccer fans around the country. So just walk us through the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I think because it's a Division III independent league positioned between NASL and NPSL, the excitement that people have isn't just for this league itself, but it's the ramifications it has for the structure overall. And I suppose, by extension, the intention that we've made public to bring in promotion and relegation once NISA is fully populated with 24 teams. But again, it brings relevance. I was talking to Rishi about this the other day, that it takes NASL and NPSL kind of off of islands, and it gives them a real place in the world. And vice versa, NISA needs a second division and a fourth division that they can align with if it's truly going to go forward with Pro Rel in the future.
Right. So obviously you're going to, you've announced plans to build out to 24 teams in NISA, but then after that it's capped and everything comes via Pro Rel in the leagues that you're associated with. Was the use of the term association instead of league deliberate for that reason?
It was deliberate for a number of reasons, including that. And then the brand development committee that ended up supporting it and voting it in actually just felt NISA sounded like a good word that people would glom onto as opposed to an acronym of a bunch of letters. But also it would be associated with other leagues, and it leaves it open to adding, who knows, perhaps a women's league or youth leagues or something like that in the future.
Right, and of course NISA sounds like NASA, so it's easier on the mouth than maybe some of the other alphabet soup of acronyms we have in the U.S. soccer world. Let me ask you about third division in general. How will the league be structured in terms of team ownership and stock for teams? Because USL has announced their plans for a third division. I think our listeners, if they're not aware of this, USL is a league that operates independently of its teams. It is a independent corporate structure, and the league sells franchises to owners and then has kind of a top-down process coming from the league office. At least this is how they've operated their other leagues. And maybe D3 will be different, but this is just based on what they've done in the past. They send directives down from the league office. But the owners of the individual teams don't have any shares or interest in the league. Will NISA be different? Will it be structured differently then?
Yeah. NISA will be more of a traditional sports league, an American traditional sports league, where the team owners actually have 100% governance of the league, which makes sense. If you put your money into the league, you want to be able to not only vote on issues, but have your votes count. So that's a stark contrast for this league. It's normal in American sports culture, but unfortunately it's not real normal in American pro soccer, and in particular with USL, which, you know, frankly is the league that our investors have compared us to.
Right.
And so those conversations over the last year that I've had with various people investors, that's what they keep coming back to. They feel they want to make sure that they have control of their own destiny.
Right. I've made this distinction a lot, Peter, and I'm not asking you to comment on this because I know it's you're not in a position to. But even though there's a lot of animus toward MLS from a number of people in who follow the sport in this country, I have at least pointed out that MLS, if you are an owner of a team or an operator technically of a team, you do have a vote on a board of governors. You do have some share in the league, whereas USL doesn't even have that. USL, you're kind of out on an island, and you have thresholds and directives you have to meet to be a part of that league. Now, maybe for some owners, that's better. Maybe they don't want the hassle. Maybe they also want kind of the cookie-cutter model. But I know for a lot of other people, that's not what they want. Let me ask you about league-wide sponsorships and cost offsets. Have you guys gotten far along with NISA to talk about that and work on that with your prospective clubs?
Sure. The pro formas that we've shown the investors all have conservative projections on broadcast and league sponsorship, but the conversations we've had, and granted it's early going with broadcasters and sponsors, are will exceed our projections by a long shot. So we're very excited about that, but we have put this league structure together so that it is sustainable even if our modest revenue predictors do not come to fruition.
What's your long-term plan or prognosis on ProRail? How long will it take, and do you feel confident?
It cannot happen until we're fully populated.
Right.
You know, the first issue is getting to 24 teams. And, you know, I've initially been saying 3 to 4 years, and it's probably in that range somewhere. But I have to tell you, since we announced NISA's launch 36 hours ago or so, I've already had 11 inquiries from different markets to join. And not all of them, obviously, are going to make it. But I do think that the more that people, investors, look at this model, and the quicker it will grow. So, you know, is it 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years? It's somewhere in that range. We'll get to the point where we can start to do promotion relegation. And it actually may just be promotion for a few years.
Yeah.
I almost think that NASL may not fully populate at 20 teams before we do at 24, and that's okay. This league can act as a bit of an incubator and promote teams without taking a relegated team from the second division. And that would leave an opening, so we would just bring in another team, whether it's an expansion team and a traditional sell a franchise, or if by that point there is an active fourth division that's fully professional and we can have an arrangement with them, whether it's NTSL or someone else, and bring them up to fill that spot. So I could see it, you know, call it as soon as 4 years that we're actively doing promotion relegation, but you really never know till you get there. And we do not have the agreements in place. We've had good conversations with both NPSL and NASL, but going from good conversations to getting agreements down is a long way. And frankly, it takes money. And these positive conversations I've had early on about broadcast gives me hope. Given the rest of the world, frankly, that's an important way how ProRail works, is because when a team is relegated, they need a parachute
yes.
of some sort. The lower division teams need solidarity payment, and generally comes from league sponsorship, from the top league, and broadcast revenues.
Right. We've seen that in England, especially with the teams dropping to the championship, getting those parachute payments and remaining solvent because of it, and most of that is, as you said, TV money. And I would point out also to our listeners that England has gone through an evolution with their promotion and relegation in the number of teams that go up and the number of teams that go down as they've right-sized their leagues. And the first division or Premier League went from 22 teams down to 20, and the second division, now the championship, went from 22 up to 24. There was some fine-tuning. So there's no perfect formula if, let's say, NISA is at 24 and NASL is at 20, to even it up, or it doesn't have to necessarily be evened up per se. But moving on, geography of this league. Have you thought about geographic considerations at the third division level because of tightness of budgets, et cetera?
You know, it's interesting. It often comes up. Certainly, we've looked at geography, and travel budgets are one consideration. But in my opinion, and I've studied the economics of it, and I've lived the economics of it for 30 years in this business, travel is overrated in terms of the impact on the economics of a team. The difference between a good travel schedule and a bad travel schedule ends up affecting a team, you know, in single-digit percentages, somewhere around 5%. So in a NISA, typical team might have a $2 million to $2.5 million budget. You know, you're looking at, in reality, $50,000 to $100,000 max is going to be the difference between a good travel schedule and a bad travel schedule. So do you want to have a good travel schedule? Yes, absolutely. You'd rather spend less money. But there's going to be other issues that are going to determine the economic fate of a team besides travel. Now, I think what's important for regional planning is actually the rivalries. I think it's great to have teams where the fans can easily drive to away games. That's a bigger consideration for me than an extra, you know, $30,000 to $50,000 a year on the travel budget.
Yeah, I was thinking about it more on those lines. For example, if you have a team in Detroit and you have a team in Milwaukee, that's drivable for the fans in both cities. But if you have a team in Milwaukee and a team in San Diego, the Milwaukee fans can't travel. Something like that.
And when you get, by the time you get to 24 teams fully populated, it's going to be like just about every other sports league in this country. The teams in the league in the Midwest and the East will have regional rivals that are easy to get to. The teams west of the Mississippi are going to struggle getting regional rivals where they can drive to away games. And that's just a reflection of the geography of our country more than anything else.
Are you concerned at all about budgets in terms of player and technical staff budgets? If once you institute Pro Realm, of course, we're talking years down the road, the potential gap between D3 and NASL and what teams are spending on that.
D3 fills that gap, because right now the gap between D4 and D2 is so great. There needs to be something in between. The budgets between NISA and NASL, I believe, are reasonable to the point where there is some overlap. So the higher budgets, I think, in NISA will actually be comparable to the lower budgets in NASL. So I think that's a good way to look at it. And then if a team, you know, when the team does get promoted, the incentive, just like in the rest of the world, is to spend more money on the team, on the players, on the stadium, make sure the standards are at a higher level. And that's the investment in the sport that promotion and relegation brings to it. And as our league, we're bringing in as partners Club 9 Sports, who specializes in raising capital, as well as advisory services on the sporting and business side. So the league function for NISA is an important part of this. It's going to be large, and it's relatively large. It's going to have quality experience, and it's going to be augmented or supplemented with experienced executives from our partners in Club 9 Sports and our marketing agency, Level 7 Digital. And that's important. You know, one thing USL does well is provide good league services.
Club services, yeah. I was going to say that's one thing they do really well.
And that's something that we want to learn from.
Great. So you actually answered my next question, which was about the league office and consultants and how it would be structured, because that would be my observation, too. I think the majority of people who listen and follow the sport probably prefer the model that the NASL has, but there is the advantage of being in USL because of the club services they provide, some of the cost offsets through USL Productions, although my understanding is that cost has been higher for a lot of clubs this season than they had anticipated, and some aren't necessarily thrilled about it. Moving on,
but
then.
You said the right thing. It's club services. It's important. Yeah. Especially with a new league, with a lot of new teams, and certainly new at this level, they're going to need a hand up. And it's going to be incumbent upon the league office and its consultants to provide those advisory services, facilitate best practice sharing, and help the teams be successful. It's an important role with the league front office, and I'm excited about that aspect of it. I've probably started more teams than anyone else in history, so I feel I have a certain a bit of knowledge on it that I can impart with these teams during the startup phase.
So, Peter, I have to ask you, is there going to be a team in Milwaukee in this league? Milwaukee fans have been, I know you've done well with the Wave, et cetera, at times, but since the Rampage left the A-League, there's been a clamoring for outdoor professional soccer in Wisconsin.
Yeah, we've received 10 letters of intent for NISA. Very pleased with that. And we're not identifying any of the individual markets yet. We'll leave it up to the individual markets if they want to go public. It's up to them. But we're not in a position at this point to identify any of them.
Great. Well, I hope we have a team in Milwaukee, for a hometown team for you as well. Have to ask you about the Chicago Red Stars, just to settle a bet between Neil Blackman, my partner on this show, and myself. You are the former owner, co-owner of the Red Stars. Would you play Christian Press as a number 10, or would you play her up front as a number 9?
That's a tough one. It depends.
You're settling a bet between us, by the way.
Yeah, it depends who else you have to play the 10. You know, I love Vanessa DiBernardo, and I could see her more as the 10 and put Christian Press up more than a forward. So I'll say a number 9 for Christian.
Okay, so Neil wins and I lose, but fantastic. Thank you so much for that, Peter. We're gonna continue to stay in touch with you about NISA. This is one of the most exciting developments in recent years in U.S. soccer, and I think a lot of people are thrilled about it.
Thanks very much. Great.
Our sincere thanks to Peter for joining us, and Neil will be back next week after his trip from Mexico City to break down U.S.-Mexico, U.S. Trinidad and Tobago for us, and whatever else is going on in the world of American soccer. I think it's going to really be focused on those two qualifiers. Again, look for that next week. Neil Blackman, my colleague, is in Mexico City, and we'll come back with hopefully some good memories and a good result for the United States. So until next time, for Neil Blackman, I'm Carter Krishnire. Thank you to Peter Wilt once again for joining us. This is the Yanks Are Coming podcast, and we will catch you next week.